I wouldn't give it up for the world. The very first contract at Channel 6 years and years ago, back in the mid-90s, there was some mention in there about, you know, somewhere in the 100 pages, you know, about can't, you know, there were restrictions on radio. And I said, no. I want to do, you know, what I want to do on the radio. You know, I'll do a great job for you. That's
good
fine.
Good catch.
But yeah, thank God I made that decision way back then, or I would have just vanished about 10 years ago for a while, probably.
Welcome to the Voices of Freedom podcast, where we sit down with the voices behind the scenes at Freedom 95. And now your host, Jeremy Butel.
Hey, thanks for joining us. You know him as Indiana's weatherman. In fact, coming up at the first of the year, we'll be celebrating 5 years with Paul Poteet as Indiana's weatherman on Freedom 95. You've seen him on TV over the years. You've heard him elsewhere. Today, we sit down with Paul. You know what's bigger than his voice? It's his personality. That makes for a fun listen. We'll go behind the scenes. We'll retrace his Indiana media timeline. And what's his favorite Freedom 95 show of all time? We'll find this out and so much more. Thanks for listening. Well, while we have Mr. Weatherman in studio, what kind of weather do you like? I'm sure you get requests for the weather all the time. Do you like a white Christmas? Do you like an early fall? Do you like Indian summer? Do you like 72 and sunny?
Are we allowed to call them Indian summers still?
No, we're not. No.
Native American. I like a good Native American summer.
If you please.
I like hot weather.
Do you?
And the older I get, the hotter I like it, I think, because my skin is thinning. I think I'm losing skin like a lizard or something. I like really warm weather. My dad was always like that too. Although my mom was from England originally, so I should like, you know, blustery, cloudy days, right? And endless, you know, winter dreariness. That's the climate over there. But I love the sun. I don't like snow. I don't like winter. I like snow on Christmas Day too, or Christmas Eve,
and that's it.
That's about it.
Once a year,
it's an inconvenience. It can be very hard to forecast. I mean, it looks good that first time that it falls, and then you just kind of, at some point, you know, by January, I'm always tired of it.
But is it not good for your business, for your line of work?
Snow is very good for business because, and you know why? Because unlike severe spring or summer weather, it goes on and on. There's a big buildup. How much snow will there be here? We could, you know, generally, if it's, you know, going to be a big deal, you might know these days, you might know like 3-5 days out. So there's the buildup and the preparation and, you know, whether or not the forecast changes. Then there's the actual snow falling. And then there's the dealing with the snow afterwards. Because unlike a severe weather event, everybody, you know, it's a much larger impact. It impacts more people, I should say, than maybe than a severe storm is. So in broadcast or online world, it's great because it goes on for so, it provides so much content, I guess,
right,
the best way to express it. So yeah, winter is great for business. And then of course there's our secret deal with the grocery stores.
Yeah. Heard about that.
That I think people really think that we have or something. And then, and I have a lot of deals, mind you, but that's not one that I have. Should have one, though, shouldn't I? I should be doing spots for Kroger.
Winter's coming.
If anyone's listening.
Go work on that. Has your industry, it's become more crowded.
Oh, my gosh.
More cooks in the kitchen. Has there been a tendency, do you feel like, for upstarts to be more sensationalized, especially in the wintertime, a little bit more look at me kind of thing?
Well, there's a...
Not naming names.
There is a democratization of information that the internet has provided in every field there is, where it's the great thing is it's easier to pass on, you know, your information. And then the terrible thing is sometimes it's easier to pass on your information. So it's easier for if someone, you know, has a different opinion about it. Used to be there were just, you know, there's Bob Gregory, Bob McLean, Stan Wood. You know, and that was the only, those were the voices of weather. Well, now, yeah, there are online only places. There are people who might be a meteorologist who just doesn't work or isn't working right now or doesn't work in broadcasting. They have their own point of view. And yeah, one way to get attention, since you are not already getting the benefit of being on Freedom 95 or being on a TV station, being with a traditional media outlet, one way to get attention definitely is to, well, you know, a week and a half, this one model here says with it we can get anywhere from 6 to 18 inches of snow. I mean, that's, but this, it's the same thing in news too. It's certainly not just weather. There's a tendency to, yeah, go for the clickbait in every instance, because that's what drives a lot of money online, is how many people are clicking. So it's not a surprise that in weatherland that's a way now to suck people in, because that's the card you play, as opposed to like me, and you know, I'll play the personality card or right. the you know me card, because yeah. I've been on for 300 years here in roughly in Central.
That's an estimate.
Yeah, that's right. I may be also exaggerating for clicks there, but really not much. I mean, it's been 40 years in media this year, and since 1982, right out of Indianapolis in Central Indiana. So someone do the math. What is that? That's like, you know, 37 years. And so the path I take usually is to trade on that and you know, whatever small personality I have. So, but everyone, you know, uses what they have. And for some, then it's, oh, I think I've got a secret way to forecast it, or,
right.
or I'm just going to go put it out there. I'm going to put out every computer modeling scenario there is, you know, 2 weeks from now. And so that's their way. And so it's like everything else online these days. People, you know, it just takes more effort to sort things, you know, than it used to. Back in the good old days when I was young and we were spoon-fed everything. Those were the days.
Well, I look at you a little bit like Jesus. When he walked the earth, he was fully God and fully man. I look at you, you're fully...
What would
Hopefully Paul, this is not blasphemic.
What would Paul do? Wait till my pastor hears about this.
Yeah, you are fully weatherman, meteorologist.
Yes, I am a
meteorologist. And you are fully broadcaster.
Right, and I am a broadcaster too, and I try not to ignore, you know, either one.
Which came first, love of weather or love of broadcast?
Love of broadcast, definitely. Radio, definitely. From the time I was young, I will still, you know, gaze at a tower. When I walked into the Freedom 95 building today, what did I just show you that I'd taken a picture of?
I saw the picture of the tower.
I took a picture of our tower.
It's a sharp one. I mean, I can't blame
you. Yeah, I mean, you know.
300 feet of glory.
Yeah, and it had some weather in it, too, because it had the sky behind it, right? So I fell in love with radio, I guess, and haven't fallen out of love of it. Somebody give me an end to the sentence. I haven't fallen out of love with it yet, is what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, definitely. Although I had an interest also in weather then when I was young, which I think I meet a lot of, you know, especially boys, in school talks or whatever. I think that's not an uncommon thing. So I had an interest in weather, too. I would watch... I grew up in Northeast Indiana, so I would watch the TV guys there. Although when Dad would spin the outdoor antenna we had, I could watch, like, we could get Channel 6 and sometimes 13 and Channel 4.
Okay.
Ironically enough, because I ended up, you know, on all those places. But I can remember vaguely seeing Bob McLean through the, you know, through the snowy interference growing up. And I would watch these guys, and I would try to... Because, you know, there was no on-demand world then. So I would try to quickly, like, copy their national map. You know, I'd have, like,
really?
Like a little blank national map in front of me. And I'd try to, you know, see real quick where the H's were and the L's were that day. And and the cold fronts and the warm fronts. And my dad, God bless him, even made me, he put like, I don't know if it was a road map, I can't remember, some kind of like an Indiana map in the cellar that we had. It wasn't a basement, it was like a cellar. He put a map and then like a piece of glass that you could wipe off, so I could draw on it like the weather guys when I was growing up in the 70s, they were doing, you know, you either drew on the map, you know, and then wiped it off later on, or you had magnets.
So no green screen back then.
Well, they would sometimes use a green screen. When I was on Channel 4 in the 80s, we had a mix of magnet and green screen. We had the best mix.
A wintry mix.
I would, this is like 1986 through 89. Now, and I'll grant you, we were about 5 years behind the other stations, because I think the Bobs and Stan by this point had very rudimentary computerized systems, you know, I think sometime starting in the early 80s. But I still have, I would have to take the, we subscribed to CNN at Channel 4, and I would have to take like the feed and edit a little bit of the satellite shot. It was like one national shot. I would edit that onto a videotape and also edit like their colorized map of what the high temperatures were. So I would start in front of right off from the news desk there. I'd finish yapping with Doug Rafferty, the late, great Doug Rafferty. And then I would, and then the camera would switch to the map, and I would get up and just walk, you know, walk in front of the map. And the map was really right behind me. It was a giant map, and I would put the H's and the L's on the map and, you know, move the little, we had a little blue triangle, and the, you know, we just went to an art store. It was somewhere right down, not far probably from Shapiro's on the south side. We just went to some art store when the L's and H's would get all, you know, grody, you know, from being handled and taken on and put a, and so I would start there and I would do that for a moment. And then right next to my real magnetic national map was a little green screen. I think it was blue back then. And I would walk, and then they would take another camera, and I'd walk into the shot from that camera, and then I would stand in front of like the fancy national things for a moment. And I think it was like the satellite loop, and then the national temperatures. And then there was next to that was like another Indiana magnetic map. And then I'd walk out of the green screen and into the, you know, in front of the Indiana magnetic map. And, you know, and gesture to that for a moment. And then they would finally take, we had like full screen Chiron that would come up for the forecast. Just, just ugly, you know, block letters. Tonight, partly cloudy, 35. And we'd have one for tonight, tomorrow. And then like an extended thing where it was, you know, nothing like, you know, what you see now. It was just, you would see, lines of text. And then they put that up full screen, and I go sit down, and it was time for Chuck Marlowe to do sports.
There you go.
It was it's so different from now. If you had told me back there, I used to sit, speaking of being in love with radio, I used to sit, you know, in my bedroom at home and listen to, it was great to live in Northeast Indiana, because at night you'd hear CKLW out of Detroit, which was a huge top 40 station in the 60s and 70s. Breaking a lot of Motown songs and things like that. And you could hear WLS out of Chicago. And you could hear WABC out of New York, all these big top 40 stations. And, you know, I'd listen to them, pretend I was on, you know, in my bedroom. Well, you know, ever since the early 90s, I have been on in my bedroom. Well, now it's a basement. But I was on the radio from my bedroom.
Sure.
Just like I was when I was a kid. And if you told me that you could actually be on the radio someday while you're sitting in some spare bedroom when I was growing up in the 70s, I would have thought you were crazy.
Talk about pulling back the curtain. You mean
that I don't
things can be pre-recorded and sent to radio stations?
You mean that I don't drive here every day?
This feels like we're breaking some news here on the Voices of Freedom podcast.
It's funny. It is funny how, you know, at one time, there was always somebody there. Like at Channel 4, there was somebody there, you know, day and night. At one point, actually doing, I also did the booth announcing for them. I did it for like 2 years before I started doing weather, and then I was still doing that while I was doing weather. But at one point they had people, and so did like Channel 6, they had people there. That's all they did was, you know, every half hour, they would read the tags they would read them live, you know, for a commercial. I'm going to take off this jacket because it makes it sound like you've got Zsa Zsa Gabor in here.
Pipe down over there.
You people in the cheap seats rattle your jewelry. They would have live commercial tags, whatever. They were now playing at a theater near you. All this was done live, you know, and the coming up later tonight on Little House on the Prairie, you know, this happens to Half Pint, and but now stay tuned for this on WTTV Channel 4. And they would do all that live. And they had just gotten to the 80s to the point where I would record every commercial announcement, every stay tuned thing that you would hear. I would record it on one reel-to-reel tape, and somebody would manually cue that thing up after every show so the right thing would run. They had a big binders full of station breaks. We had a big binder, one binder per day that I would sit there and read, you know, all the announcements, you know, that would run at the end of. But now, if, you know, I know that that's all done, you know, in bits and bytes, you know, it's the fact that everything is nonlinear now still is the biggest, I guess, difference from, you know, when I got into this 40 years ago. I mean, the technology changes are, if I stop and think about them, sometimes I just want to go outside and throw it.
But some things have kind of circled back. Or like if you think about, I think about some old, maybe like WSM out of Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Some old radio where the DJ is reading a spot for a flower company or something.
Well,
that stuff is coming back. You'll have in-show reads from Glenn Beck or Sean Hannity because of what we know about research and commercial breaks and DVRs and all that. That local in-show read is coming back.
That's a great, that's a great observation. And you hear that because if any client or any businesses are listening, because it works, people pay attention that way. And it's like a friend telling you about a business as opposed to you hearing about it on a commercial.
It's
that simple. And it is interesting because radio originally, if you listen to old time, I also like, you know, I'll listen to a Jack Benny show from the 30s or 40s or an old, you know, some of these dramas from back then, Suspense and all these shows. And a lot of times they would also, you know, weave, the sponsor would become a part of the show. It was usually, you know, like one sponsor would present the show. They would buy the half hour or the hour, and it would be the Jack Benny Jell-O show.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And so it was kind of like their endorsement of the product too. And then at some point in the 50s, you know, people started, you know, coming up with the idea that we'll sell, you know, it'll all be spot sales. It'll, you know, you participate, a bunch of people will participate in a show. But you're right, it is kind of coming back to that with all of the endorsements that you hear now, because it's sort of a win-win for everybody. If it's something that a presenter, you know, really does believe in, like My Beautiful Hair, for example, just to pull something out of thin hair.
So bad.
That is the daddest.
But so good.
Of dad jokes. But you're right. And it's, that is something from back in the Grand Ole Opry. They did do that too. It was like, you know, something flower. What kind of Martha White flower. I can remember hearing ads for that too. My dad was a big country music fan. So, you know, if he was out late at night, you know, he might have 650 on, you know, WSM out of Nashville. Or there used to be a country music show aimed at truckers out of New Orleans on 87 on WWL.
Well, Truck and Bozo out of
LW,
they played music until, what, maybe 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, they were still playing music on LW out of good old Cincinnati. But you're right, that's pretty much talk now, which I think is kind of sad. I miss the country music just because, you know, that was still a little bit different. But there are still some places like SM that are holding on to that. And they have the beautiful Blau Knox tower, too, to get back to radio towers. Here's those diamond-shaped ones.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Those are people. Google them right now. Blau/Knox Towers. And WLW has one, too, not far from maybe Mr. Weatherman.
Which we may get into that. This is neither here nor there, but when we were still sports on 950, we had the overnight show. I'm drawing a blank now who it was, but he used to have truckers call in. And he would say, "Where are you going and what you hauling?" And then he would have them blow their horn.
I love that.
To get the varietals of horns on the air. So that, and that was really, that was 8 years ago, maybe.
I can tell you all of, you know, those stations that were Clear Channel and what they were doing like in the 70s when I was growing up, because I would sit there, you know, and dial them in at nine, you know, WSM out of Nashville at 650 and WNBC at 660 and WMAQ in Chicago at 670. I mean, I can go up and down the, and WLW at 700 and WOR at 710 and on and on and on, and you know, LS at 89 and at one time WCFL, which was a big top 40 station until up until the late 70s in Chicago. They were at 1,000 and WOWO. I grew up just down, you know, a county away from it, what used to be a huge nighttime signal too, out of Fort Wayne, Indiana, WOWO. And yeah, again, that was, you know, that was a big part of my childhood. I tell people, I've told, when I talk to student groups or whatever, sometimes, or radio groups of high school kids, whatnot, that was like the World Wide Web then, when those stations would come in at night, because you could instantly be in touch with something, you know, far away. And you, how else are you going to do it? I mean, you could watch TV maybe, but you know, somehow the fact that it was the local station that could suddenly hear, it was a little, it was more exciting than just watching the network.
Growing up in my basement bedroom, I used to fall asleep listening to San Antonio Spurs games on WOAI, 1200
right.
in WBAP in Dallas. And still to this day, one of my favorite traditions, don't laugh, is Christmas Eve, after the Christmas Eve service, at about 7 or 8 o'clock at night, a bunch of stations around the country go all Christmas music for Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. 700 does it, I believe. 890 out of Minnesota.
That's the LS in Chicago.
Oh.
Yeah. Or there may be another one.
Yeah.
Oh, you're thinking of 830.
Yes.
WCCO.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, and that's in Minneapolis, yeah.
There are, you know, 650 does it, obviously. There are a few stations around the dial where you can get that, like, super sentimental feeling. That scratchy AM radio.
Oh, my gosh.
On Christmas Eve, there's nothing like it, I promise.
Oh, I'm sure that – well, no, I'd be the last person to laugh at that. I'm sure that really – because you hear that sound, and then you can see yourself, you know, listening to that once upon a time. WHAS out of not far from us, down there in Louisville, used to, yeah, they would have, like, they would play an old-time radio version of Dickens, you know, sure. Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
I can remember, you know, listening to that, like, on, I don't know if it was Christmas Eve or Christmas night, that they would do that, too. So, yeah, AM still conjures up a lot of... memories for me. You know, I don't know, you know, if you're under the age of 30, you know, how many memories it conjures up these days, but the dial is a little more cluttered. I don't know, it's a lot noisier than it used to be, and I'm not trying to make a, you know, content point here. I mean, literally,
well,
it's a lot noisier than it used to be.
And I still think it's incumbent on broadcasters. I think about, and that, since we're talking Christmas, one of my favorite scenes from A Christmas Story is when Ralphie rushes to the radio because it's time for Little Orphan Annie.
It's time to,
it was appointment listening. And so it's cheesy as anything, but you have to be a place where people need to be, I think. Whether you're like us and it's all national programming, or whether you're a local broadcaster, you need to be appointment listening.
Well, you have to. It's like any other thing. It has to be. I worked for a company called Metro Traffic, you know, where I actually ended up running their Indianapolis office. My foray into management that I never saw coming either. There have been a lot of things that I never saw coming that I ended up doing. But in the mid-90s, I ran their Indianapolis office for a while and was also one of the, you know, traffic people.
Sure.
In the morning, and the guy who was a very smart guy who owned, it was privately held then, it was a great place, it was a great gig, believe me, but he used to always talk about non-duplicated product that we needed, you know, to have. We had the people that did the traffic. My version of his non-duplicated product was that I wanted as many, you know, personalities on as possible, because you couldn't just come in and duplicate that. You maybe, you know, would be able to get all the information that we had from our plane that we flew, whatnot, and the monitoring that we did of the police scanners. But our non-duplicated product, you know, 80% of that was the personalities of the people. And so that's what people are drawn to. Like you said, stuff you can't get anywhere else. You have to have, yeah, something compelling other than just, you know, some vanilla milquetoast thing.
How radio nerdy do we sound right now?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I know. I mean, and I've done, you know, I've done so much TV now, and I suppose yeah. over my life I've done more TV and radio. But as you know, I do radio every day still, and I wouldn't give it up for the world. I never, the very first contract, or when they were drawing up a contract at Channel 6 years and years ago back in the mid-90s, there was some mention in there about, you know, somewhere in the 100 pages, you know, about can't, you know, there were restrictions on radio. And I said, no. I want to do, yeah. you know, what I want to do on the radio. You know, I'll do a great job for you. That's
good
fine.
Good catch.
But yeah, thank God I made that decision way back then, or I would have just vanished about 10 years ago for a while probably. But I, you know, radio is, I need to do that. And I think it helps me on TV too, because it keeps me, I think it just keeps me sharper than, because you have to, in radio, so many times you're working on your own, and you have to rely on your own wits to get into things and out of things when you're talking. And radio is still so centered on making sense when you talk. I mean, in TV, you have the distraction of the pictures. And if you're not having a great day, then maybe you just make a, you know, a couple of extra weather maps, whatever. But in radio, like right now, there's nothing else as you listen to this. Or and by radio, I mean audio, too.
Right.
However you're consuming this. There is nothing else right now. It's just, you know, us talking and trying to move the conversation along. And that, I think, keeps me from, you know, not, you know, going insane.
Well, we're about a half hour in, and I clearly have more conversation than we're going to get to today. So at this point, I'll ask you back sometime.
Oh, my gosh, a two-parter?
But I want to maybe skip ahead a little bit. You referenced the early days of Indianapolis TV, and in the interest of full disclosure, I grew up in a non-TV home. Mm-hmm. So I first knew you as a radio guy. So for people like me or younger viewers, if you can, walk us through your loose timeline of Indianapolis media, because I know you've been in a couple different places.
You're so delicate. That's nice of you.
And if it doesn't take too long, what was your first break? How did you get that start?
I worked for, in my small town that I grew up in, Huntington, Indiana, I worked at that time, they still had a small little community radio station there. And so I worked Sunday mornings in Huntington, Indiana, and we had a really good radio program. We've had a bunch of guys and gals that have come out of this Huntington North High School radio program. We had like a 900-watt, you know, radio station that the high school ran. So, you know, you could, you know, it got covered the county. We did we did sports and things like that, and DJ shows. And the teacher, Bill Walker, is his name, still in touch with him. He had made a lot of contacts. Anyway, I ended up getting a job not only in Huntington, but then in Fort Wayne at the big top 40 station at the time in Fort Wayne, WMEE. And I worked there for a while. I worked at another radio station in Fort Wayne for a while. Met my wife at this top 40 station, Mrs. Poteet. I met her way back in 1979. And we were friends for a while, and we ended up dating eventually. And obviously, we ended up getting...
In that order.
In marriage. That's right. We did it the old-fashioned way.
Now you're friends again.
Yeah, now we're friends again. It took a while after we got married. There was like 40 years where we weren't friends. Now we're friends again. So I met her. She ended up moving down to Indianapolis, and then I eventually followed too, working for a while in Kokomo, splitting the difference. I was a morning guy in Kokomo. And then sometime, I think it was in like January of 1982, I was able to get my wife had gotten a part-time job at down the dial at another one of the AM stations here in town. And they, when they were still playing music, they were playing big band music. Ah. And so she had become friends with somebody who worked down that hall from them at WFBQ at Q95. And this 19-year-old punk got a part-time job at Q. And so that was my first job, was at WFBQ in 1982. Talk about fitting the demographic perfectly.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, a 19-year-old male.
Yeah.
And that was back when they played new. You know, they play the music now that I played when I was there.
Right,
you know,
right.
They're kind of in, they're in that time period forever now, but... So we're still a big, it was a big rock thing. at the time. So I worked there. I worked at the old WNAP also, and I worked at a station called WTPI. I worked at a couple of places that don't exist anymore, including Burger Chef in Huntington, but that's another story. that was my one, you know, pre-radio job.
Okay.
So I worked at those places. And the TV thing started accidentally because I was hired by Channel 4 in 1985 to do those booth announcements, we used to call them, these voiceovers that I referred to earlier. You know, now, you know, tonight at 11:30, Sammy Terry, you know, has a movie with Dracula. They would, these little announcements I'd read at the ends of shows for 10 seconds, they're all recorded now. You know, and I would read those, and I did that for about a year and a half. Anyway, they were looking for a weather person because the guy who did weather, he also did like eight other things at the station. I mean, that was just the way. We only have one newscast a day, so they didn't have like this big giant dedicated weather team.
Yeah.
And so they were looking for somebody. They were auditioning Colts cheerleaders, the brand new Indianapolis Colts cheerleaders. People from the weather service. And I remember one of the guys on the crew saying, you know, oh, you should do that. You should try out for that, Paul. And yeah, right. But I did. I had no television experience, had no idea, you know, what you really did. But and I ended up getting the job. That's how bad the competition was.
Did he know you were inclined towards weather as a kid?
I think I had mentioned that, yeah, that I had an interest in weather. So then all of a sudden, something that had been kind of dormant, all of a sudden I was in the weather business. And I really was terrible when I would look at tapes of myself and I'd be holding my hands awkwardly. You know, I'd have my, you know, arms up all the way through it. I wouldn't always know that I'd been on camera the first few weeks. Like when they take the little shot at the end, I'd just be sitting down, you know, staring, looking at the desk, you know, not realizing there was a thing called the foreshot or the wide shot. I knew nothing about television.
Were you wearing makeup at that point?
I think they had showed me that. And so that was, you know, yeah, that was my first foray into, you know, the wild world of makeup. And I wasn't even sure that I wanted to do it because, like I said, I'm a radio guy and everybody in radio, you know, always made fun of TV people.
Oh, yeah.
Bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5, you know, tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. And then, I remember when Don Henley's Dirty Laundry came out and I was at Q95, everybody would laugh. Oh, yeah, that's everybody on Channel 13. Ha, ha, ha. And then all of a sudden, there's one of those people on TV, you know, in addition to being one of those people on the radio. So, but I had no experience. I had never, and I'll freely admit to anyone, I never took any J-school courses, and, you know, I just sort of landed, you know, walked into that. And then I did that till about 1989. And then they decided they wanted like a real TV guy. They had new owners that came in and they wanted a real TV guy who had been a meteorologist. And so I was out.
Okay.
Of there. But then it kind of resurfaced again. I was doing some radio work in Lafayette in the early 90s, and the place, they had their own television station there, and they needed somebody to help out. And the news director was like, didn't you, you know, used to do weather on Channel 4? And because a lot of people saw that station, not necessarily our newscast, but they would stumble across the station because we had all the IU games and all the Purdue games back then. And, you know, Cowboy Bob and Sammy Terry and Janie, you know, we had all these, the Bob Knight show every week. We had all this iconic, there were like 150 people that worked at this place.
Wow.
It was great. It was like working in a sitcom working there because there were just so many characters. But because of Channel 4, then I ended up doing some weekend weather for a while in Lafayette. And then ended up doing traffic on TV because WRTV was one of our affiliates, and I had filled in for the guy who had been doing traffic, and the news director said, would you, you know, we'd really like you to do it all the time. And I'm like, oh, you know, here we go again. You know, like you try to get out of TV and it just keeps sucking you back in. So I ended up doing traffic on Channel 6 for 2 years. And then again, they expanded their newscast on the weekend, and Kevin Gregory told the news director, you know, the guy that does traffic for you during the week, he used to do weather. Yeah. He's done weather on TV. And they were like, oh, that's great. And so I ended up doing for a while. I was on 7 days a week for a year on Channel 6. I would be doing traffic during the week on the Monday through Friday show. And then I'd be on, you know, doing weather with Martha Weaver on the when they started doing weekend morning news on Saturday and Sunday. And finally, after a year of that, even I, you know, can't keep that up forever. After a year of that, I told our news director, we've, you know, enough. You know, the audience either must love me by now or they must hate me by now. I mean, I'm on every single day. So then I left the traffic world behind and then started doing their morning weather full time. I went on Friday. I was in one side of the traffic and weather box on the morning show. And the following Monday, I was on the other side of the box introducing somebody else doing traffic, you know. So, yeah, I mean, TV, it's been funny for me because it's always, you know, it always just kind of finds me. I don't find
right,
it
yeah.
good, you know. And then I spent, you know, gosh, like 15 years on the air at Channel 6. Mm-hmm. I just helped them celebrate their birthday earlier this year. They had me in and we taped some, you know, reminiscing. And they showed some old clips of when I was doing traffic in Jeremy. That is the first time in a long time that I've really felt old when I saw those. Because my hair is like jet black and my face is so smooth and so young. Because I was like in my early 30s when I started doing traffic there. And oh, my Lord, how did it all go away?
How was the critique of your performance, though?
Well, you know, by the time then that I got to Channel 6, I kind of, you know, in Lafayette, I kind of finally learned, you know, to be a little more professional.
what to do with your arms.
Yeah, what to do with my arms. And we had an actual, you know, weather graphic system in Lafayette. So I kind of, you know. And then I actually got interested in the weather part of it. And so Kevin Gregory and I, we took a 3-year course, which I would not recommend doing once you've already started a family because it's very time consuming. But we took like a 3-year course from a University of Mississippi State University. They focus on these courses for broadcasters who want to actually, you know, acquire all or go through all the courses to become meteorologists. So we did that for like 3 years. I think we finally, it was like 1998 through 2001, somewhere around that time period. And so, yeah, at that point, then I was actually fully in the meteorology world at that time. So, yeah, a lot happened there.
Celebrating almost 5 years with Mr. Weatherman, Indiana's weatherman, Paul Petit on Freedom 95. That's coming up at the turn of the year, which is awesome.
I can't.
Hard to believe.
I know. I'm very proud of that. And I can't remember exactly now how or why I approached you, probably because I'm a salesman at heart. And there must have been some need that I perceived. I can't remember now.
You ran into Dan O'Brien at an event, I believe.
Okay. Is that the way it came about?
And he pitched it to us. And then very soon, details withheld, there was a need.
But I don't think I knew that at the time, did I?
Probably. No, probably we didn't know that at the time.
Isn't that weird? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's God.
I have no doubt.
I'm on loan from God for you guys, just like Rush.
Half your talent behind your back or something like that?
Half my barometers are tied behind my back right now.
I'll skip ahead again here. We'll have plenty of meat on the bone for the next time. But in the meantime, you became your own brand. Paul Petit and PaulPetit.com became your own brand. You're one of the first local people to do that. I think there's a lot to be learned from what you have done, what you built yourself to. And that's got to be tough, especially because social media wasn't what it is probably when you set out on that course, whether it was intentional or not, I don't know.
It was intentional, and it started even before I really hit high gear once I left Channel 6, because I didn't like a schedule. They were going to have me leave. They were going to flip me from the morning show to working weekends. And at that time, I was doing so much live radio, I mean, like interactive live radio, that it would have totally closed that off, and which I think was part of the idea maybe at the time. You know, changing my schedule would have been a benefit for them. I don't think that particular manager, I went through a lot of different managers.
Sure.
Most of them were fine. I just had lunch with, you know, one of them the other week. And most of them were fine. But, you know, eventually you run into somebody who maybe doesn't like what you're doing or maybe realizes what you were doing. And what I had tried to do all the time I was there, to come back to radio again, was to have an identity separate from the TV station, because sometimes if you're just doing the weather, or, you know, the formats can change so much on those shows where it kind of gets tightened down and you don't really get a chance to be yourself very much. And so I always thought that if I if people know me from another venue and they get to know all of me, that I'll have more value down the road if I want it as a personality. And so that was another reason, other than the money, that was another reason that I always wanted to do radio. You don't know how many times that people that I was on TV with or reporters or whatever said, why do you bother with all this radio stuff? You know, why do you do four or five stations? Because I would have no free time in the morning. Anytime Good Morning America was on, I was on a radio station. And that's the reason why. To me, it was like it was an investment in not just making money investment, but also in building that brand. And that's where I think it started. And if I hadn't been on the radio all those years, I don't think I would have been able to just, you know, say, you know, forget you to a TV station. And I'm going to be my own weatherman and all these radio stations are going to keep using me. I don't think if I hadn't worked at it that hard for several years before, I don't think they would have stayed with me. And every radio station that I had when I left Channel 6, they all stayed with me. It was like five of them. I went around to all of them before I officially left, and I said, I'm probably going to be leaving the TV station. You know, would you still use my weather service? And they all did. And then once I was completely free of the TV station, that opened up, then you can do family leisure spots. And then you can do, we did events at restaurants, Paul Poteet's Got to Eat. You know, I met up with a guy who sold these events and social media was then just beginning to click in. This was like 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. And so we would tweet about what restaurant we were going to be at, and he would have a camera crew there, and they would make a video of it that the restaurant would get then to use on their social media and on their website. And it just opened up. And then the video stuff that I'm still doing now for different businesses online. But it takes a lot of work. Do you look around? Do you see a lot of TV people doing that?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's very, very time consuming. Ask Mrs. Poteet.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of, and you have to have kind of the heart of a salesperson or a small businessman, not necessarily a salesperson. You just have to, because you have to be involved in, you know, all of a sudden you're responsible for all the money you make, and directly responsible. So, and a lot of talent, they're just not built that way, which is fine. But I've talked to a lot of people about, after I did it, and for a few years after that, I talked to a few people on the air about, well, so how do you, you know, do it? And, you know, and I would explain it to them, and then I would think, okay, I've never saw them doing the things that I talked about. So,
yeah. And it's got to be a confluence. I feel like it's equal parts hard work, name recognition, talent, and technology kind of coming together at the same time, and the point where you have now been able to, and we can say it, move states, and you're still Indiana's weatherman to us.
In the course of doing freelance things, then once I was, as I say, free from being an employee there at Channel 6, I ended up doing freelance work for Channel 13. About a year later, they used me a couple of different ratings periods where they would have me on the morning show, and we would do these crazy features for, you know, Paul Poot. What was it? I'll Try Anything Once. That was one of them. I was like, they had lost Tree Boy, who was like their, you know, wacky guy in the morning. They had a falling out or something. I don't know. And so I became like their, you know, occasional stunt boy. So I did stuff for them. And then I ended up doing stuff for Channel 8 a couple of different times for quite, you know, big stretches, you know, of, you know, it would be like a couple of months at a time if they got in a bind. I ended up doing some stuff for a TV station up where I'm from, Fort Wayne. And then all of a sudden, about, I guess it's been now 2 years ago, right? Yeah, 2 years ago, I saw in a Facebook group that I'm in, you know, meteorology, broadcast weather, that this station in Cincinnati, WKRC, one letter away from the turkey drop. You know, I should point out, it's not WKRP, it's WKRC.
But it is in Cincinnati.
But it is in Cincinnati. They were in kind of desperate straits. Somebody had left, you know, unexpectedly. And, you know, another person was pregnant, and it's, you know, December 1st, and they were facing the holidays. And I thought, well, you know, that's not that far of a drive, which I was reminded of today. And I get reminded of all the time because I'm here all the time in Indiana, which is why I still feel like I'm a part of this state, too. But I started doing some freelance fill-in for them. And it's funny. It's, once again, things just kind of clicked. and they really liked me, and I really liked the station. It's a monster station. They've been like number one in every newscast. It's sort of like, not to get too inside here, but it's sort of like Channel 13's dominance here, only it's gone on even longer down there. And so I thought, well, the people are all really nice. I feel right at home at this station. It would be fun to work at such a heritage, you know, a station that had been so successful for so long. And you know, they made me the offer. And so, yeah, I kind of get the best of both worlds. So I am a 5 day a week, you know, TV guy again, but I still have my basement, you know, I still do every, you know, all the radio and online stuff that I was doing before. And I'm back here all the time,
right,
as you know, because we've gotten together before, and I've done indie boomer TV here. And obviously, you know, I get my hair combed professionally a few times here in Indiana, if you've seen the TV commercials. And more importantly, my two sons, one is in Bloomington. As soon as we're done recording this today, you know, later on today, I'll see him. There's another one who lives up in Anderson, and he's the one with the family, and my two grandsons are there too. So we're back all the time.
Yeah.
And we're not so I still, you know, although I'm not technically here, you know, I still feel awfully connected. So, and it's technology. You're right. It's the internet, broadband, internet drives all of this. For years, you know, when I was doing a lot of live radio stuff, it was ISDN, which was a different technology. That was like the most important part of my world for a long time, too. But now it's more, MP3s and the video editing software, you know, that I use for the video stuff. I have a little green, I have my own green screen in my basement that's, you know, tacked up. Yeah.
Wow.
Cool. It's just, again, it's the whole, everything is democratized, I guess, more than it used to be. And you don't need a stick, you know, you don't need those beautiful broadcast towers to necessarily to get it out there. But the beauty of my world is I get to still be, you know, on the broadcast towers. Yeah. And so I'm, you know, I'm new media, I'm old media.
Love it.
And of course, I'm just old too. So there's that. But I think I've done a pretty good job of adapting.
I feel like you could write a book, a personal brand building book, because I feel like you've done it really well.
I think you have to know who you are and why and what you're good at, you know, and try to just hone in on that constantly. You know, what do people want from you, or what do people expect from you? And then, but then the hard part is then you have to never disappoint them. So I always tell Mrs. Poteet, if you watch me or hear me and you think, oh, he's not as good as he used to be, you know, please.
You want to be the first to know?
Tell me, you know, get me. I don't want to ever disappoint people when they hear me or when they see me. I don't want them to think, you know, like Adam Vinatieri. It's time for Paul to retire. You know, he's not as good as he used to be. He used to be funnier. He used to have better memes online than he has now. So that's the hard part is you can decide on your brand, but it's you have to constantly live up to it. That's why I'm always impressed by guys who've done it real, just, you know, like listening to Limbaugh, you know, and you think, my Lord, I remember him being on when I was still, you know, in my younger days working in Indy, and there he is.
Yeah.
You know, still every, or Paul Harvey when he was still around and alive and on the air. And I think, God, he was on the radio in the 1950s.
And he was great to the end.
And he was to the end, you know, he's still in there swinging away and, you know, with the rhythm and the cadence and all. And that, you know, you have to really, really be into it, I think, at some point to be good. And so sometimes I wonder, you know, how long? maybe I'll decide before Mrs. Poteet does that I'm not good enough for it anymore. Because I think that's part of it too. People, you want to be, if you're a personal brand, you know, once you decide what it is, then you have to live up to it.
Yeah.
All the time. And that's it. The brand is what people expect from you. Oh, I'm going to get, you know, maybe the weather or some, you know, laugh out of him. That's, you know, you just kept to keep delivering it over and over again. How many times a day am I on this place?
Yeah. It's powerful, though.
Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot, but it is powerful, and it's like any other kind of exposure in media, like we tell our advertisers, and it's true. It's cumulative. You know, it's the frequency of the times that you're on that it does make an impression.
Well, as I look at the time, speaking of Cincinnati.
Man, can I talk or what?
Like Gary Burbank would say, I must be off. We must be off. But next time we'll dig into some of the family stuff and faithful, very, very, very diehard Freedom 95ers will remember the day that Mrs. Weatherman was on the air.
Oh my gosh, that's right. When I lost my voice for like a week. Oh, she hated that. Because when she retired, she was like Johnny Carson. She never has walked into a radio station again. And she was really good on air.
That day she sounded great.
Oh my gosh, she has dynamite voice, but she was like, "Oh, only for me." She wouldn't have done it for anybody else in the world. But I've totally forgotten that. But yeah, she's happily retired. We're happily married, and we've got two great boys and two grandsons and a granddaughter on the way in February.
Congratulations!
Right after our fifth anniversary in January.
that's two celebrations in a row, right there.
That's right. Yes, I'm very happy. I'm so pleased to have been on here for the last 5 years.
Fit.
I've really enjoyed it. I was going to say we've really enjoyed it, but I don't want to be presumptuous.
Well, Saved by the Bell, because I told you we were going to talk politics, but we don't have time. But I will, on our way out, grab what is your favorite Freedom 95 program of all time?
Well, you know.
Because you were our P1, number one, North Side listener after the flip to 95. You were the guy that if something was going on signal-wise.
Oh, yeah. I would. People.
You let us know.
Yeah. This isn't just, like I'm just sucking money out of them. I mean, that's probably one of the reasons that I approach you. I listened to the station. And yeah, if there was a problem with that AM tower where I lived. Not that there were ever any problems. I'm like, I would be calling him or texting him, hey, you got a weird buzz.
I don't know, Paul. That's somebody else.
I think, Laura Ingraham is not making that noise on her own. I liked Laura on when she did her daily. I listened to her weekly podcast now. Yeah. I don't know even how
back
often.
Back when she used to do it.
Yeah.
It's been like five weeks.
Yeah, it's been kind of infrequent. So I was a big fan of Dennis Miller.
Yeah.
And I still listen to his podcast, which he has been pretty regular on. He's on like Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I liked him. I've gone back and forth on Glenn Beck. But you know what? I've listened more again now, like since we put him back on. I'm thinking, okay, now he's a little more like what I remember. I remember like right around the late, when did he first hit big? Like around 2000 or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember hearing him and thinking, boy, this makes Rush sound dated because he's a little more creative with sound and with audio. And then I don't know, something happened where it wasn't really, for the period of time that
he strayed for a bit.
Yeah, he kind of lost his way or something, and we waited here at Freedom 95. We waited for him to find his way again.
I honestly can say I've been shocked at how good of a show that he puts on every day.
Yeah, and I will say now that I gave him a chance again after the election. he was kind of annoying maybe before the election when I would tune in, but gave him a chance. I forgive him the Cheetos and all that. And yeah, I think he's back to being, interesting. You know, he does a different thing and does, again, more with audio. I like what he does with audio. He did the thing the other day with a Halloween. With the Telltale Heart. I mean, I love that. You talk about, getting back to the roots of what makes radio.
It was very, it was very much a blast from the past for me, just listening to how he was doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, he did that. He did a really good job at that. Yeah. So, I think that's
mine.
And I'll tell you what, just for practical, maybe not for radio reasons so much, I do enjoy listening to Dave Ramsey. I don't know. I think it's just like being a voyeur. Where you're like, okay, how much money do they make? How much have they saved? I mean, that always interests me because I've always had kind of an interest in investing. That's kind of like a little, not a hobby, but I mean, I do, I play the stock market to a certain extent, or at least, have some stocks. And anyway, and so what I'm trying to say is I actually own Freedom 95. That's the only reason they have me on the station.
Breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news. So to me, I like listening to Dave too, just because I just enjoyed that problem solving aspect of it. Like, you know, guys always wanting to, you know, solve a problem right away. So I enjoy his show too.
Good.
Yeah. I'm pretty pleased with what you've done with the place. I think there should be more weather.
More weather. You've given me a lot to think about.
Yeah. With someone else though. I'm really tired of that one guy.
Well, now that I know about your history and traffic, yeah, traffic and weather together. Yeah,
traffic and weather together. There you go.
All right. Well, Paul, to be continued. This was a blast.
Thank you very much for having me.
And happy 5 years.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Voices of Freedom podcast on Freedom 95. For an audio archive, visit the podcast tab at freedom95.us.